I'll begin while the microphone gets set up. It's a tremendous simcha to be able to introduce Rav Schechter in our Beis Medrash. I had a tremendous zechus of being in Rebbe's shir for 3 years. And I want to introduce Rav Schechter, I guess, with some of the nekudot, some of the points that we all learned. There's a tremendous appreciation the Rebbe gave us, a love of Kol HaTorah Kula. There's no piece of Torah that can be ignored. Everything is important, and you need it all, and you need to love it all in order to be a true Talmid Chacham. Rebbe imparted to us also the need for every single person, every single Jew, to be as big a Talmid Chacham as possible. We need Talmidei Chachamim today. It's in growing need, not waning in any which way. And everyone should feel empowered to be as great as they could possibly be. Shailas are very complex. And Rav Schechter always embraces the questions with tremendous warmth and tries to go and explain them from the different facets. And it's really a tremendous thing that Rav Schechter has been available to the American Rabbanim, Eretz Yisrael Rabbanim, and all over the world, as his Talmidim have gone on to become Rabbanim everywhere, and is looked up to as a posek of our generation, and with tremendous simcha, we'd like to call upon Rav Schechter to answer all the questions.
As we had in the previous years, I will go to the questions.
We had about 50 questions this year, and if we had Rav Schechter here for 4 or 5 hours, we would have enjoyed asking every one of them. Unfortunately, not everyone made the cut. We'll do as best as we can. How does Judaism forbid a husband and wife from touching sometimes 2 weeks out of a month? They're finally married, and it doesn't seem fair that they can't touch each other.
We all have to learn to control our feelings. That's a main. How do we control ourselves about all the rest of the mitzvahs? It's a big challenge. That's the challenge of being an observant Jew, is to learn how to control your emotions. Okay. Our ancestors have succeeded for so many generations, so we should continue to succeed.
Is it mutter to not give every person who comes and collects tzedakah in order to save money to give to a family member who needs the money?
The Shulchan Aruch tells us there are priorities in giving tzedakah. The poor from the family take precedence to the strangers. The kedima means you have to give 2/3 to your relatives if they need so much. From however much money you have to give to tzedakah, so you should give 2/3 to your relatives, 1/3 to the rest of the people. When someone comes, so the Rambam quotes a pasuk in Mishlei, Al Yoshev Dach Nichlam. It's not right to let the Yoni walk away with nothing. But you have to give him a $25 donation. Give him a little bit. Whoever comes, give him a little bit. I have three married daughters who live in Eretz Yisrael, and one of my sons-in-law learned American Sarav. So Rabbi Ram Shapiro was the Rosh Hashiv American Sarav for many, many years. He had a very good sense of humor. He was a big kibbutzer. So the boys asked him, are they obligated to give tzedakah to these Zanim who come all the time? So he said in Shulchan Aruch, they give you the definition of an Ani. An Ani is a person who doesn't have Masai Mizuz in the bank, and he doesn't have a steady income. So he said, these guys have a steady income. They have a dinar vashir. You're not looking to give them any money. Probably right. They have a steady income. They're not Ani. Sounds funny, but the Pashtus is like that. Yeah?
Can one ever change his minhag?
minig is binding mitam neder. That's how the Ran in the dorm quotes the Tosfos like that. That's the way the Tosfos read the Gemara. That's why it says in Shulchan Aruch. So there are different types of minhagim. So there's a minig hayachid and there's a minig hatzibur. We assume that there's a neder hayachid and there's a neder hatzibur. Shuas hatzibur. Mishbati eschem rosh Yerushalayim. The Gemara says Gimel Shuas. It says the pasuk that appears three times in Shir Hashirim. Mishbati eschem rosh Yerushalayim. So the Gemara understands that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had Klal Yisrael take a Shavuos. They see that there's a concept of Shavuos HaTzibur, not only Shavuos HaYochid. So if a person has a Minayiki, he learns Daf Yomi every day. And then he sees it's too difficult or whatever. He's not gaining that much, he wants to change. So it says in Shulchan Aruch, you have to have a HaTorah in the dark. You have to be Mataneda before you want to violate it. If a person is observing, a person belongs to a certain Kehillah, and that tzibur has a certain minig, so that's binding mitam neder at tzibur, minig at tzibur. So you can't make a taras and dorm on that. I'm not the bala neder. Let's say every so often there's a boy who's studying in Eretz Yisrael for the year, and his family has a minig, they don't eat gebrox. So he's stuck, Pesach here is going to have to eat by someone who does have a gebrox. So it's not shach. How can he make a taras and dorm? He's not the bala neder. You have to get all the chassidim. He comes from a certain group of chassidim. We have to get all the chassidim from that group to be mataneder. It's not up to him. He can't be mataneder. There's a minig to wait 6 hours between fleshing and I want to be mataneder. I'm not the balaneder. You have to get all the klal Yisrael to be mataneder. You don't have to wait 6 hours. So sometimes you can change your minig. You join a different kehillah. Mar has, let's say, a person, a yeke, moves to America. And now he lives in a normal community, no other yek is there, and everybody waits 6 hours, and even out there, he waits 3 hours. But he's in a different community now. Does he plan to go back to Germany? Does he plan to go back to Yekish Akila? No, he's going to live over here. So the minhagim of his tzibur are no longer binding on him. He now has different minhagim. Well, let's say a girl is an Ashkenaziyah, marries a Sephardi. We assume the husband and the wife belong to the same tzibur. Either the husband enters the wife's tzibur, or the wife enters the husband's tzibur. So it doesn't have a bal tshuva ger. So you don't say the wife enters the husband's tzibur. The husband doesn't have any tzibur. It's a bal tshuva, he's a ger. What do you mean? So the husband enters the wife's tzibur. Or let's say the husband has a tradition from Dari, whatever, Ashkenazim. And the girls are Sfardi, the reverse. And normally you say the wife enters the husband's tzibur. The wife enters the husband's rishus. So the husband and the wife belong to the same tzibur. So whoever switched now from one tzibur to the other follows the other minhagim. Or let's say you have somebody Sfardi, and Eretz Yisrael, who learn in Panavision, they learn in Brisk, they learn in Ashkenazi yeshiva. They converted, they talk Yiddish. They converted, they became Ashkenazi. So they're no longer bound with the Sfardi minhagim. If they join up, sometimes they want to join just for the Derech HaLimud. They enjoy this style of learning, but they don't join the Kehillah of the Ashkenazim. Okay, so they still identify themselves as being members of the Sephardi Kehillah. And sometimes they fall in love with the whole baggage of the Ashkenazim, and they convert basically. They join the different Kehillah. So you join the different Kehillah, so you follow a different Minhag. You can switch. Rabbi Gifter used to tell over the story that when he was brought up in America, and after high school he went to learn in Telz in Europe for a few years before the Second World War. So his Rebbe in America, he learned in the yeshiva. So his Rebbe was Rabbi Palev. So his Rebbe in America told him he shouldn't join the Aguda, shouldn't join any political organization. So he was there in Telz, and all the boys always went to the Aguda get together, so he never went. And after many years of being in the yeshiva, he corresponded with his Rebbe. They published the correspondence. Unbelievable. He would write a letter in Telz and send it in the mail on Monday, and Rabbi Palev had already responded on Thursday of the same week. The mail reached America, and he already wrote back a letter. They had back and forth, 5 letters in 2 weeks, back and forth. It wasn't special delivery. It was just plain delivery. So he was still close to his Rebbe in America. But he was learning in Talis Yeshiva, so he became so close to the Rabbeim over there. So after several years, so the Mashgiach called him in and he said, I understand you don't go to Aguda, how come you don't go? He said, this Rebbe in America said you shouldn't join any political organizations. So the Mashgiach said, I have a suggestion for you. Why don't you switch your Rebbe's? So he said, whoa, that never occurred to me. Switch his Rebbe, and from that time on, he belongs to Aguda. What kind of a joke is that? No, the answer is not a joke. He was closer to the Rabbeim and tells the Yeshiva than he was. He was still corresponding with the Rebbe in America, but he's not so close to the Rebbe. People switch the Rabbeim. So people switch the Rabbeim as far as following Psak Halacha. Everyone was supposed to follow Rabbi Muvam, the Psak of Rabbi Muvam. So he switched Rabbeim, and then people sometimes switch Minhagim because they switch Kehillahs. I no longer belong to this Kehillah, I belong to a different Kehillah. So the Minhagim, Minig HaYochid is binding Mitam Neda HaYochid. Minigat kohol, minigat tzibur is binding mitam shuos tzibur, neder tzibur. The person switches his tzibur, so he's no longer bound by the minhagim that he observed from the old tzibur. He has to follow the minhagim for the new tzibur. A lot of times people switch minhagim.
Al titos torat imecha, how does that fit in?
Family minhagim. So al titos torat imecha, family minhagim is not going to shake off the family, but if they're minhagi hatzibur, so then it depends which tzibur does he belong to now. They're different. Sometimes they're family minhagim, sometimes they're personal minhagim, and then sometimes they're community minhagim. So community minhagim, when a person moves from one community to the other, so he becomes a member of the different tzibur. So their minhagim are binding mitam neder of that tzibur. And family minhagim are binding. Okay, he still belongs to the same family.
If a frum Jew informs the secular media about abuse in the frum community, who's responsible for the Chilul Hashem? The abuser or the one who told the media?
Why did he notify the media? Because he thought it'll accomplish to stop the abuse. He did it l'shem shamayim. Sometimes you have no choice. You have to. You can't just let the abuse keep on going. Sometimes the police can't do anything about it. Sometimes you need the media. The one of the abusers, the one that makes Nechil Hashem, the one who masses to the government, and the one who masses to the media, sometimes you have no choice. You have to. You have to make a cheshbon. You have to consult the Talmud Chacham and make a shikur, make a calculation. Are you going to accomplish what you want or you're not going to? Sometimes the only way to get things done is by making a whole thing and publicizing.
Would there ever be a halachic obligation to attack Iran? They seem to be preparing to kill the Jews, so should we kill them first?
Look, you have to figure out what the facts are, and if the facts are that they're posing a threat to the community in Eretz Yisrael, so you have no choice. You have to make sure that you're going to win the war. There's no mitzvah to fight the losing battle. You have to make sure you win the war. Okay, so we hope the Israeli government has good information, and that we hope that they're following up accordingly.
What was the Rav Zatzal's understanding of modern orthodoxy with the obligation to learn Torah?
Rav Soloveitchik felt that every Jew is obligated to learn Torah. That is true. Daven every day. Everybody has a chiluk in Torah. Some people have a smaller chiluk, some people have a larger chiluk. Everybody has to learn Torah. What was the Rav's opinion? Everybody has to learn. He made learning more popular in America. He felt that it's not right that learning should only be for a small group. He said, learning belongs to everybody. The Medrash comes on the Pasuk, Torah Tzivolon Moshe, Marosha, Kihilas Yankiv, that a former, once entered Reb Chiya's base Medrash, he started screaming at Reb Chiya, you're a Gazlon, you stole my Yerusha. He didn't know who he was. He said, who are you? What do you mean I stole Yerusha? He says, Torah Tzivolon Moshe, Marosha, Kihilas Yankiv, the Torah is a Yerusha for all the qualities, so you stole my Yerusha, give me back. He's right. We have to, the Rabban and the Talmid Chacham have to see that they share the Torah with the farmers, with everybody. So if you're going to hold, learning is going to be so esoteric, it's going to be so complicated, even the Talmid Chacham, even the Yeshiva Bachur won't understand. So Rav Soloveitchik felt you have to popularize Torah, you have to make it understood to the masses. He didn't lower the level, he didn't lower the level of the learning, he elevated the level of the masses. He used to always give public shiur. He used to have on his yard site for his father, on Gimel Shvat. Every year he used to give a shiur in Yiddish for 4 hours, and the people would sit glued to their seats, and they would listen for 4 hours. He would explain everything, the most complicated passages in the Gemara, he'd make everything understandable. And other yeshivas, they said how great the Rosh Yeshiva was, that when he gave a shiur, after 10 minutes, everybody got lost. But Rav Soloveitchik, the greatness of the shiur was after 4 hours, no one was lost. Everybody followed from the beginning to the end, and they would sit glued to the seat. They wanted to hear the whole thing. Everyone, you have to explain Torah to the masses. He said that in America they have, in the newspapers and the magazines, they always explain to the public the latest chidushim in chemistry and physics and biology, whatever, nuclear energy and everything. They always explain everything so the masses should understand. So he said you have to teach Torah also in such a way that the masses should understand. It shouldn't only be a small select group of the ones who are learning Torah. You have to get everybody to learn Torah. The modern Orthodox included. I don't think he distinguished between the modern Orthodox as opposed to the ancient Orthodox. The other day we attended, I was here a month ago, with a group of 16 students. We were touring Eretz Yisrael during intercession. So there was a symposium here in Beit Shemesh. So it's interesting, one of the people on the symposium had an interesting comment. He said there are some Charedim who view the Jewish religion as an old antique, an ancient antique. He said, imagine if this table would be from the first king of England, from centuries ago. So you would be mocked, but not to move it at all. You're going to move it, the whole thing can fall apart, the whole thing can collapse. So they treat the Jewish religion as if it's such an ancient antique from centuries ago, millennia ago. They're afraid to move anything. Everything has to be exactly the same. And we are not afraid. The Jewish religion is not an ancient antique. It's not going to fall apart if you're going to move it 2 inches away. The bottle of soda will fall out. But it's not an antique. The halacha knows how to take care of itself in any situation. We have dinim. Under these circumstances, you pass like that. Under those circumstances, pass like this. You can't assume they're going to preserve the religion exactly the same way. It's not going to be the same way. People make a mistake. They think that everything, they think they're doing everything the exact same way their fathers and their grandfathers did. It's not true. The halacha keeps on applying differently to different circumstances, at different shayla. Shulchan Aruch, you have Hilchas Basa B'Chalav, there's only one sif. There are pages and pages of pages. Under these circumstances, it's Asa B'Hanon. Under those circumstances, it's Asa B'Achila Mutab Hanon. Certain circumstances, it's Mutab Achila. There's so many different conditions. So the world keeps on changing. So the world, the shayla, people think it's the same shayla today as it was yesterday. A lot of times, not the same shayla. So many different things change. It could be it's a different shayla. So you have to ask the shayla all over again. Sometimes the Rabbanim will reverse the Psak HaMekubal because it's a different shayla. So the modern Orthodox just means that the modern Orthodox realize the world is changing, and sometimes you have to apply a different sif in the Shulchan Aruch. The religion is not an ancient antique. We're not afraid. The Torah is not going to collapse because we're going to move it from one continent to the other. Torah wasn't given in Europe, it wasn't given in Eretz Yisrael, it was given in the Midbar to show that it applies all over the world. All over the world. The Torah can apply anywhere, under all circumstances. Limud HaTorah, so they should Limud HaTorah is for everybody. That is correct. He popularized the learning. As opposed to Lakewood. See, Lakewood, when you go to Lakewood, you hear a shiur, so everybody gets lost after the first couple minutes. That was considered the highest level of learning. Everybody gets lost. And Rav Soloveitchik trained a whole generation of people. The highest level of learning, everybody follows. Not that you say it's a territory that people can't follow. Try to explain in such a way that everyone should follow the halacha.
As a Baal Tshuva, how can one deal with certain family members who are not from when I go home in June? One issue is parties at non-kosher restaurants.
Can't eat non-kosher food? What is there to discuss? There's no room to negotiate. You can probably drink a cup of water, okay. Sometimes water can be treif also, but most of the time the water is kosher, okay. Sometimes they have factories in America now. Years ago, they used to have orange juice factory only made orange juice, and tomato juice only made tomato juice. Now, they make the machinery that it should be compatible, so they can make clean juice and purify water and do wine and do chazan schmaltz and do everything on the same machine. The machines run 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. They just wash it out in between and they do another product. So every so often, the water is treif. The water is treif in America sometimes, but most of the time, the water is kosher. But if you go to a non-kosher restaurant, look, if you have to go because the family is together, so you got no choice, you go. But you can't eat anything. You can eat a banana, okay. You can eat fresh fruit, you can eat. You can't eat the non-kosher food. Some rabbis still going with their old ideas. Some of the rabbis in the young generation still think you can eat fish, kosher fish, in a non-kosher restaurant. Can't eat kosher fish in a non-kosher restaurant, because in a non-kosher restaurant, they keep on cooking all day long. So you have no right to assume stam kelim eina ben hayoyman. If you visit and it goes home, you have a right to assume mistama the treif kli that he used yesterday for chazer, mistama it's after 24 hours, so if he cooked something kosher now, mistama it's eina ben yomo. But if it's a restaurant, they keep on cooking every 10 minutes, they cook another thing. So you can't assume that the kosher fish, even if you know the fish is kosher, you can't assume the kosher fish that's cooked on the non-kosher kelim is going to be kosher because stam kelim made a meal. There's a dinner of bishul lakum also, it's a tray for a restaurant. Some of the cooking is done by non-Jews, so it's a real din. Food that's cooked by non-Jew may not be eaten. It's a real din of bishul lakum. Bishul lakum is prohibited because it may lead to intermarriage. We have such a high rate of intermarriage all over the world. It's over 50% of the Jews are intermarrying, so we should certainly be careful about the bishul lakum. It's not a joke. Bishul lakum is going to lead to intermarriage. That's why they prohibited it. We can't compromise on the shmiras and mitzvahs. You have to be friendly. You have to be mekarev of all of the relatives. But you have to explain to them with a smile and with a cheer that I'm observant and I can eat non-kosher food.
Is it mutter to shower on Yantif, and does the Gzeres Habalonim apply today?
The Mishnah in Beitza says you're permitted to heat up this machlekes b'sham and b'sil. We pass like this, so you're permitted to heat up water in order to bathe pan of yodav v'raglov. So the Bali Atosis point out that it would appear that to heat up water to take a full bath or a full shower is not allowed, only to wash pan of yodav v'raglov, part of the body. So that's the question, why? The Tosis says, Tosis claims that taking a bath or a shower, the whole body, that's called the Dovashim Nishab al Nefesh. That's only the Tainik Diyama, that's not Lebriya Saguf. So that's a din in the Gemara, that to burn Mugmer is not allowed on Yom Tif, because even though you have Hanor from smelling the Reach of the Mugmer, because that's the Tainik Diyama, that's not Lebriya Saguf, and that's called Dovashim Nishab al Nefesh. So in the Shulchan Aruch it sounds like that we pass kalaktaisus, but the reason why it's not allowed to take to cook water to take a shower or a bath because it's davar shein shavu'chol nefesh. If that's the reason why, so the Zman Hazeh is shavu'chol nefesh. Everybody knows to take a shower to take a bath. It's healthy for the body. Today it's not letanik b'yam. Today it's a davar shavu'chol nefesh. So the Mishnah Brura recommends that one should be choshish for the Ramban. The Ramban gave a different answer. Ramban disagrees with Tosis. He says that a shower and a bath was always davar shavu'chol nefesh. He doesn't think that Tosis is correct. It was always considered the lebriya saguf, not the tiny biyamo. So why shouldn't it be permissible to heat up water on Yom Tov in order to take a bath or a shower kol haguf? Ramban is the one who says because of the gzeres habalonim. The gzeres habalonim was instituted balonim, a bathhouse attendant. So the bathhouse attendants are not the most learned people in the Jewish community. They're not the most observant, they're not the most learned. So in the days of the Tanaim, they used to keep open the bathhouses on Shabbos. And they claimed falsely that they had heated the water from Erev Shabbos and they retained the heat. And they were lying and they really cooked up the water on Shabbos and they were in violation of Bishul. The prohibition of Bishul on Shabbos is not only if you cook water to drink it, even if you cook water to take a bath, it's also Bishul. So the Chachamim saw that the Balonim were not the most observant, so they said, even if it were true, even if you have a case where it is true, that the water was heated up from before Shabbos, you're not allowed to take a bath in warm water, because we're afraid the Balonim are going to cook the water on Shabbos. So they made a gzeira on Shabbos. So the Ramban claims, based on the Gemara, that the Gzeres HaBalanin, even though it didn't make sense on Yantav, the Yantav was included, Yantav Atu Shabbos. Even though the reason for the Gzeres doesn't apply. So the Mishnah Brura recommends that one should be Machmar like the Ramban. Shulchan Aruch sounds like Tosfos said, the only reason why you're not allowed to heat up water on Yantav to take a bath or a shower is because Ein HaShavu L'chol Nefesh. And Mizman said that should be Mutter. But the Mishnah Brura recommends one should be Machmar like the Ramban, that the Gzeres HaBalanim. So then the Mishnah Berurah quotes Machlokes Achronim, where the Gzeres HaBalanim only applies if you're taking a shower in Yatza lettuce water, or even in Poshrim. What if it's warm water? So this is a Machlokes, Rabbi Kivega quotes in the Tshuva such a Machlokes Achronim. So the Mishnah Berurah again is Mishnah Berurah usually Machmar everything. All the Chumash. That's why many Rabbanim recommended that for Balabatim you should Paskan like the Aruch HaShulchan, he's usually Nekon, like the Yeshiva people. It makes sense maybe to be machmer like the Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah is usually machmer on everything. So the Mishnah Berurah is machmer chumah on top of chumah. It's machmer like the Ramban that the Gzeres HaBalanim applies. It's machmer that even, he quotes a Beis Meir like that, it's machmer that even to bathe in Poshrim is also, lukewarm water is also included in Gzeres HaBalanim. So he says the only thing that's left would be to take a cold shower. Some people will survive a cold shower, or to take a cold shower only to turn on the hot water to the extent that it takes out the chill of the cold water, so the water won't even be lukewarm. That is, that's mutar l'chaladeis. To turn on the hot water just to take out the chill, that's mutar l'chaladeis. There's no zeres habalanim, and for sure there's no issue of davishen shavu l'chol nafesh. In the days of the Rishonim, the Magen Avraham quotes from the Baal HaTosfos, they had a minig to be machmer, not even to take a cold shower on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So that was that's only a minig. That's a machlokes HaTanaim. One Tana in the third parak of Masechta Shabbos, one Tana is of the opinion that the Gzeres HaBalanim was so broad it even includes rechitza b'tzoinim, that you're not allowed to take a cold shower. So we really don't pass on like that, but the Baal HaTosfos has such a meaning. So that already the Gedolim wrote 150 years ago, that we don't observe that meaning anymore. That since today it became more common that people take showers and baths much more often. I seem to remember in high school that they taught us after Whitney invented the cotton gin, and they started manufacturing cotton underwear, so that's when people started showering much more often. Before the cotton underwear, so they would take a bath once a year, and they would smell, so they would throw perfume on the body. George Washington, all of Benjamin Franklin, they would throw perfume on the body so you shouldn't smell. And after Whitney invented the cotton, I already forgot when Whitney invented the cotton gin, and they started manufacturing cotton underwear, that's when it became more common to bathe. Some people even bathe once a week. Some people even bathe twice a week, three times a week. Some people even bathe every day. So that's, it became more common to bathe, so a lot of the dinim changed. Hilchas Avelos, certain minhagim, there's a meaning not to bathe all of Shloshim today. It's not shaykh. A person shouldn't bathe all of Shloshim. Nobody has that meaning today. So everybody bathes. It's in Shulchan Aruch. It says the meaning from the Rav Yod not to bathe all of Shloshim. So nobody has that. So this meaning also, about 150 years ago, they did away with this meaning. Not to even take a cold shower on Shabbos and Yantar. They said that Mizmano said we don't observe that meaning anymore. So that's Mishnah Berurah. The biggest chumrah that he comes up with is you should take a cold shower and just turn on the hot water to the extent that it takes out the chills, and that's l'chol adeis mutar. Bein l'taisis, bein l'haramban.
What did the Rav Zatzal hold regarding women singing? Are there any heterim for radio, Zemiris of Shabbos, or the opera?
The students once wanted to sell tickets to make some money for the student organization to go to an opera. So they asked Rabbi Soloveitchik, so he said, it's Kenegan Adin, you're not allowed to go to the opera. The radio, that's a shaila, the Gdolim in Europe. Some of the Gdolim in Europe held that the whole reason why called Bisha Erva is because it's Ma'uritaiva. So some said it's only Ma'uritaiva if the woman is there in front of you. The woman is not there, you're listening to a record or you're listening to the radio. So there were those Gdolim who were making. About Smiris, the Sridi Yesh has a tshuva, a famous tshuva. After the Second World War, there were youth groups. There had to be Mechazik people in Shmiras and Mitzvahs. They used to have youth groups, mixed boys and girls together. So they used to sing Shmiras together on Shabbos. So he quotes from the Chito that some poskim were of the opinion the Kol Bisha Erva only applies if they're singing love songs, Ashiri Chol. whenever they sing Shirei Kodesh, so some felt that there's no issue of Kol Isha. Others were of the opinion that there's a kula of Trei Kol Ilo Mishtame. If you have a few people singing together and you don't really hear the voice of one specific woman, then there's no chashash of Kol Isha. So this Sri Yesh quotes the kula from the Chidor, if you have both together, if it's the Sri Yesh quotes from the Chidor, Chidor was from the 1700s, that Betzira both together, there's room to be Mekum. If you have people singing Zmiris, and it's not one woman alone, it's a group of people, then the Tzirut, the both Svaras together. I always used to think that that the kula only applies if you have men and women singing together. And Rabbanim told me that they were told not so, that if you have a group of women singing together, also you say Trei Kol Ilo Mishtame. Sri Yesh was surprised. He was brought up in Slobodka, and he was invited to give shiurim in Hildesheim Seminary in Berlin. And he was surprised to see that the Yekkes were so religious. And the most observant Yekkes were singing Zmiris. The sons and the daughters, everybody was singing Zmiris together. So he asked, what's going on here? So they told him they rely on this kula from the Chidor. And he writes that the Yekkes somehow were successful in preserving Shmiras HaMitzvahs by their children. In Eastern Europe, they were losing their children. The daughters were not Shomer Shabbos at all. The daughters would go with the girlfriends to the movies on Shabbos afternoon. The sons would go to the Rebbe's Tish. The father and the sons would go to the Chassidish Rebbe's Tish. And the daughters would go to the movies with their non-Jewish friends. There was no education for the girls. They were losing the sons also, to university, to communism, to all kinds of crazy things. And the Yekkes somehow were successful and were keeping, maintaining their children as observant. So he says, so this Sri Yesh writes, apparently they understand psychology well. Apparently this is a good kula. We should follow the kula. Sometimes you have to learn to appreciate certain kulas to live with them. You're gonna always be machmir everything. So you're going to turn people off from the religion. There was a period of time that I used to be the rabbi in a branch of Breuer's shul, the branch in Paramus. So I had to speak to Rabbi Schwab every so often about different issues in the shul. I remember once he was telling me that, of course, it's better for women to cover their hair with a tichel or with a hat rather than to wear a shetel. But he doesn't recommend it. He encourages that all the women should wear a shetel because they're going to tell them they have to wear a hat or a tichel. The end of the story is going to be they're not going to cover their hair at all. It's too difficult to observe that chumrah. He was telling me there are certain kulas that the rabbis have to learn to live with in order to get more people to observe Shmiras HaMitzvahs. So that's what the Sri Yesh writes. Apparently the Yekkes were good on psychology and they knew how to maintain their children with religious observance. Apparently this is a good hetter, that if you have the Shirei Kodesh and Trei Kol Ilo Mishtame, there's room to be made. So you can't tell the women that they shouldn't sing at all the Shmiras. So they're going to feel excluded from Shmiras HaMitzvahs. You have to somehow see to it that the women should feel included also.
Is it possible for the gula to come via the current governmental system in Israel? Should we support a government that is not from?
The Gemara speaks about two possible ways of the gula coming. Either Zachu aloi Zachu. If Zachu, then Martha is going to come very speedily. Lebaila menateva with nisim in the floods. And if loi Zachu, if the Jewish people are not that worthy, that'll come slowly, slowly with derech ateva. The Orech Chaim HaKadosh writes in his commentary on Chumash on the Nevuas Bilam. He writes on the pasuk there that the Gula Asida will be with a miserable government in Eretz Yisrael. It'll be slowly with a secular government. So that's what we have today. as much as the religious Jews are upset about the government, the non-religious Jews are also upset about the government. No one's happy with the government in Eretz Yisrael. It's an unusual thing, more so than in other countries, I think. In other countries, I don't know, maybe because of the religious split, everybody, the government always has to take a stand on religious issues. So the non-observant are upset why the government is supporting the religion too much, and the observant Jews are upset why they're not supporting the religion sufficiently. Look, in the days of Esther Amalka, she was a nice religious girl living with a non-Jew. You read the Megillah in less than an hour, you think the story ended in an hour. It's not true. The end of the story was that she lived with Ahasuerus. They lived happily ever after, but Yolad Banim Abanus, and she was stuck with this, she was living with the Goy. The Gemara said, Bikoach Nefesh is Doicha, the Israel living with the Goy. It's not considered Gilei Arayis for some reason or another, and she was living with the Goy. And the Chachamim looked at this situation, and they felt that that was Aschalta de Gula. That's why they had a right to make a Yantif. They deemed this as Aschalta de Gula. That's why many look at the present situation in Eretz Yisrael, as miserable as people think the government is, but many, many feel that this is an Atzchalta Degul. Looks more so than Esther being married to Ahasuerus. You have a Jewish government ruling over Eretz Yisrael. That's the first step in Binyan Beis HaMikdash. Geula means Binyan Beis HaMikdash. Ramban writes in his introduction to Chumash Shmos, that Chumash Mos tells the story of the first Golos, Golos Mitzrayim, and the Gula therefrom. So then he poses a question. Well, when you get to the end of Shmos, you still don't have the Gula. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't permitted to enter Eretz Yisrael. You don't have the Gula till they return to Eretz Yisrael. That's in Sefer Yoshua. So how does he say that Shmos is, has the story of the first Golos and the Gula therefrom? So he says, no, when they built the Beis HaMikdash, that was the Geula. The definition of Geula is Binyan Beis HaMikdash. He explains that Golus, it's a tragedy when the Jews are not living in Eretz Yisrael. The Ikam Mokam for Shmiras Kala Mitzvahs is in Eretz Yisrael. But that's not the main tragedy of the Golus. The Ramban claims, the main tragedy of the Golus is we no longer have Soda Laka Aleha Halehev. He's paraphrasing the Pasuk in Iyov. Means that the Obas had a Hashuas Hashchina. Abraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov had Hashuas Hashchina when they were in Eretz Yisrael. When Yaakov goes into Golus Mitzrayim, so he lost that Hashuas Hashchina. So that's the main tragedy of the Golus, that we lost Soda Laka Alei Ahalein. When you get to the end of Chumash Mos, you read Truma Tetzava VaYakov Pikudah. They built the Mishkan. There was Hashuas Hashchina. That is the Geula. You can live in Chutz Lord and can have a Geula if you have a Hashuas Hashchina. You can live in Eretz Yisrael. You don't have a Geula. You don't have a Beis HaMikdash. That's what they quote from the Chazanish, and people say it was double talk. People have done all the Ramban. They said the Chazanish was using double talk. They asked the Chazanish, how does he assess the situation? They have a Hakamas HaMedina. So he says, it's the end of the Golos, but we still didn't begin the Geula. What does it mean? You don't have a Beis HaMikdash. Ramban says Geula means being a Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara has a term, Aschalta de Geula. Aschalta de Geula means there's something that's going to lead up to the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Gula means Binyan Beis HaMikdash. Aschalta means something going to lead up. So the Gemara says, Melchamas are Aschalta de Gula. So Rashi and the Gemara says, which Melchamas? All the wars in the world. So Rashi, that's how the Chassam Sefer holds. All wars in the world. The Mukach spoke about the First World War. He says, Aschalta de Gula. He's relying on the Chassam Sefer who lived in the 1800s. The Prussia-Austrian War was Aschalta de Gula. Rashi doesn't say it like that. Rashi says the war's in Eretz Yisrael, but who's going to be the balabas over Eretz Yisrael? If the Jews win the war, that's Aschalta de Gula. That's the Seder HaDvarim. Gimel mitzvahs, the Tztavi Yisrael b'chnisosam l'aretz, we have to fulfill three mitzvahs in the proper order. First mitzvah is La'amid La'melech, to establish a Jewish government over all of Eretz Yisrael. Next is the Jewish government has to have an army. Every government has to have an army for security purposes. So the next mitzvah in order is L'Hachriz Arash Al Amalek. The Jewish army sponsored by the Jewish government has to wipe out Amalek. And the third mitzvah is Livnas Lehem Beis HaBchira, when it will be peaceful in Eretz Yisrael. So then we have to build the Beis HaMikdash. 1967, after Melchemet Shesh HaTayamim, and everyone's so excited, Harabai is Be'adenu, so many Rabbanim said, we have an obligation to make a Mizbech and to build a Beis HaMikdash. Rav Soloveitchik said, what are you talking about? There's still security problems. The mitzvah to build a Beis HaMikdash says, B'feirush in the Gemara, Ki Aniach HaShem Alakech HaLocham Mikol Leibach HaMisavid Baretz, when it's peaceful in Eretz Yisrael. if they're still worried about terrorists and the Arabs making trouble. So it's not yet the time, not yet the chiyuv to build the Beis HaMikdash. So Gula means Binyan Beis HaMikdash, the Ramban says. Aschalta de Gula is a term that the Gemara says, Muhammad said Aschalta de Gula. So Muhammad, if the Chasam Sefer held that the Prussian-Austrian war was Aschalta de Gula, and the Mincha Saluza holds that the First World War was Aschalta de Gula, had nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael. So the Muhammad and Eretz Yisrael was certainly Aschalta de Gula. If the Jews would have lost the war, it would not be Aschalta de Gula, it would have been the end of the Jewish people. But the Jews won the war. So of course it's an Aschalta de Gula. The Chasam Sofer and the Mincha Saluza would be the first ones to say, Muhammad HaShechrur was Aschalta de Gula. All the Muhammad's are Aschalta de Gula. Of course, this is going to lead. It looks at this government is going to lead to Mechias Amalek, and is going to lead to, that's the Seder Hadvar. You have to have a Jewish government controlling Eretz Yisrael. You have to do Mechias Amalek, and then after Mechias Amalek, then you have to build a base up here. So that's called an Aschalta de Gula. We're upset about it, but the Chachamim in the days of Nespurim were upset also over the fact that a nice religious Jewish girl had to live with the king, and there's nothing she could do with her about it. And their children had no religious education whatsoever. They were brought up as going gemurim. But nonetheless, they saw through all of that and they said, this is Aschalta de Gula. That's why they made the Yontif. That's how the Nesibis and the other Poskim say, why do they have a right to make a Yontif Purim? There was no Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara says, you only have a right to institute a Yontif in the Rabbanim as much as Beis HaMikdash or Yekayim. So they say, either in connection with something that has to do with the Beis HaMikdash, or Aschalta de Gula is going to lead up to being a Beis HaMikdash. So we hope and we pray that this government is not going to collapse. We hope this government does collapse. We want to have a religious Jewish run the whole government. But the institution of Malchus Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael should not collapse. And will probably continue till the government will sponsor the building of Beis HaMikdash. Yeah.
What is Rebbe's favorite sefer?
Chumash, I guess. I don't know. Chumash. I look in the Chumash every week, Mama Sefer. I never realized that's what it says in the Chumash. Every week I realize new things. I've been learning Chumash for so many years. We never pay attention to what it says in the Chumash. Mishnayos, Gemara. Stun, you know. That's what it says in the Gemara. Wow. You studied the Gemara so many times, and then you look again. Wow, I never noticed that. That's what it says in the Farish and the Gemara. I know it's hard to say. I mean, it's my favorite sefer from the contemporary svarim, the modern svarim. I don't know. Kulam shavim l'tag. All the svarim are good. Whatever helps you learn better. It's wonderful.
How does one balance his learning when he's more attracted to certain svarim like Musar or of Nachman svarim and Nakamara?
Not everybody has to be interested in Gemara. Look, there's a variety within Torah. Tanakh. Believe it or not, study of Tanakh constitutes a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. There's some people who would question that. I'm from the Mekilim. I think that studying Tanakh is a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. You study Midrashim, mitzvah of Talmud Torah. We don't understand Tanakh well without the tradition of the Torah Sheba'al Peh. So you study the Midrashim on Tanakh. He studied Sefer Musa, he studied, this is all Chalokim of Torah, he studied Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Not everybody is ready for the big Shulchan Aruch. When I was growing up, nobody studied. We didn't have any Mishnah Berurahs in America. I didn't see a Mishnah Berurah until 6 years after I was married. My wife bought me a wedding anniversary gift, instead of me buying her a gift. So she bought me a Mishnah Berurah 6 years after we were married. I never saw, when we learned Aruch Chaim in the Yeshiva, we didn't have any. I don't think there were any Mishnah Berurahs in the Yeshiva when I was a student. He used the Magen Avraham with the Machzah Shekel with the Prima Gadol. Then when he started looking at Mishnah Berurah, we were stunned. This holy tzaddik reverses the Psak HaMakubal for centuries, came out on every page of the Shulchan Aruch. It was never assumed like that. That's what the Chazon Ish had tied this against the whole Mishnah Berurah. He reversed the Psak HaMakubal based on new Kisvei Yad that they came out with, new fangled Achrayim. He reversed the Psak HaMakubal for centuries. Look, the different halakim to Torah. Everyone should learn. Say chalkeinu v'sarah secha. We daven every day in the daven. Everyone has his chelik in the Torah. Not everybody's cut out for enjoying Gemara. Some people enjoy Tanakh, and some people enjoy Mishnayos, and some people enjoy Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. He used to have a balabos who used to live in the neighborhood. Maybe it's in your time. To tell you the truth, I don't remember that you were my Shia. I just remember we were contemporaries. I don't remember whether you were the Rebbe, I was the Talmud, I was the Rebbe, you were the Talmud, we were students in the same time. All the people I see, I don't remember what my relationship was. I just remember they looked familiar from the yeshiva. So we used to have a Talmud in the yeshiva, Mr. Fleischman. He lived in the neighborhood, and he enjoyed Torah. He used to work in the post office, and the day he was able to retire, his son now has a kol for Chosh Mishpat, Yossi Fleischman. As the Kol Chosh Mishpat in Yerushalayim tells me, has 140 people. They have a Dezen every day, they have Dinei Torah every day. They have non-observant Jews come for Dinei Torah to his Dezen. Because they know if you go to secular court, it'll take you 6 years till the case will be brought up and it'll cost you a fortune. You come to a Dinei Torah, you have it in one day, for next to nothing, for $25, I'll give you a psak. That's a reasonable psak. So this Mr. Fleischman, the father, was a frugal balabas. He used to come to the Shi. The day he was able to retire, I think he either retired 62 or 65. So if he died 62, he got less pension. So the day he was able to retire, middle of the week, he retired, came to the yeshiva every single day. He used to learn with an 18-year-old bacher. He was 62. He learned with an 18, 19-year-old boy. He would sit and listen to the shiva. So I would be developing a whole pilpul, a whole maracha, and therefore it should come out like this. He would raise his hand. But in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, it says not so. Or I would develop the whole thing and say, raise it. It says like that in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. After I give this whole hasbara, he would always say what it says, yes or no, with the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is marvelous. When I was a student in yeshiva, that's what they taught Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. When you graduated, then you went out to the Chayei Odom. In the middle of high school, they started teaching like Mishneh Berurah. Whoever, Man Chashmei, who's going to read Mishneh Berurah? It's so complicated, it's so difficult. Mishneh Berurah is for big Tamina Chachamim, for big long time. Somehow in Europe, everybody was Mekusha to the Chafetz Chaim. Everybody spent a little time in Radni, the learning in the yeshiva, getting a bracha from the Chafetz Chaim. So everybody, after the war, all the Rabbanim who survived the war, who reinstituted Torah all over the world, in America and in Eretz Yisrael, so they were all Mekusha. Everybody had a Sheiches to the Chafetz Chaim. So everybody started learning Mishneh Berurah. But in the earlier years, whoever learned Mishneh Berurah, it's very complicated. So different halakim to Torah. So some people enjoy Sifrei Musar, some people enjoy Tanakh. You should try to have variety. The Gemara says, "Goli mishalosh adam shloisav shlish b'mikra shlish b'mishnah shlish b'tam." You should try to have diversified the learning. You should have learn halacha and learn pilpul and learn Tanakh and learn Chumash and Rashi. You have to learn it. Now, we said every week, whoever the person enjoys. Not everybody's cut out for learning Gemara. If a person enjoys other halakim of Torah, so be it. So let him learn the other halakim of Torah. There's a lot of variety in Torah also. It's very cheerful. If you switch, you're going to learn Chumash all day long. It will be coming out of your ears. So you learn a little Chumash, you learn a little Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, you learn a little Mishnayos, you learn different things. You learn Medrash. Ein Yankiv used to be years ago. To Mincha Ma'ariv, in many shuls, the Baal Batim would learn Ein Yankiv. Marvelous. Other shuls, they would learn Mishnayos between Mincha Ma'ariv. It's also learning Torah. Torah doesn't have to be dafked Taisvus with the Marsha, with the Rabbi Baruch Ber. If you learn Mishnah, it's also learning Torah. If you learn Tanakh, it's also Torah. Everything is Torah. A person should learn whatever Chelek of Torah talks to.
In my shul, the chazan must take the Torah to the women's section. When I daven for the Yamid, my father insists I give the Torah to the rabbi to pass around the women's section.
Why, the rabbi is a woman? You can never tell.
The rabbi thinks it's not there, and so should he listen to his father, to the rabbi?
When the rabbi thinks it's mutter, so he should give the same Torah to the rabbi, let the rabbi take it. Okay, good. Daven a different shul. You can always solve the problem, daven a different shul.
Is long hair for a man a problem?
There's a Mishnah in Sota that lists off differences between men and women, and it doesn't list off all of the dinim. So Tosfos quotes a Tosefta in Sota that lists off more differences. So one of the additional differences is about haircuts, that the men and the women have to have a different style of haircut. Men should not have a haircut like women. Women should not have a haircut like men. That's number one. Number two, there's a din of chukasakum. We're not supposed to identify with the practices of the Nochrim, or the lower level of culture, a lower level of society. The Mishnah has a din of chulkasakim, even applies if you have observant Jews and not observant Jews. I'm going to dress or do things like the non-observant Jews. That's also included in the chulkasakim. So Mishnah and chulam like that. Usually the long hair is a style from the hippies or from the subcultures, not from the normal people of Minay Yishuv. So it's not proper. All Tanaimik, we call yourself b'nei melachim. They just have an argument to what extent do we apply it. But all the Jews should realize, call yourself b'nei melachim. We're all princes. My mother always used to tell me when I was a little boy, my father passed away. My father's name was Melach. Father is a king. I have one sister. My sister's name is Sarah. His sister is a princess. My name is not Sarah. But my mother said, your father's a king and your sister's a princess. You're a prince and you have to act accordingly. We should dress accordingly. We shouldn't dress like slobs. Someone said they left out a question about wearing jeans. Okay. A Talmid Chacham is supposed to dress and should be tochok kibara. The bari should dress. The outside should be, he should look like a prince. Should look like a Talmid Chacham. Call yourself the name Elohim. All the Jews should dress properly. They should take a normal haircut. They shouldn't identify with a lower part of the society that has a subculture on it. It's terrible. Is it an issue of chatzitza by tefillin? So Gemara says, strictly speaking, it's not. You have long hair, like shaggy dog hair. Put the tefillin over here, so that's not a problem. The Nozir. I remember I met the Nozir many years ago, the first time. We were married a few years, we had no children, so we decided to visit Eretz Yisrael to be blessed with children. We're blessed with many children, many, many grandchildren. Half of them live in Eretz Yisrael, half of the grandchildren live in Eretz Yisrael. So I remember when we first came to Eretz Yisrael the first time, so I brought money from Rabbi Beryl Soloveitchik and Rabbi David Soloveitchik. So we had the address, we didn't have the apartment number. So we went to Rabbi David Soloveitchik's home. So we had to go to the mailboxes to see which apartment he lived in. So we were surprised to see that the Nazir lived in the same building as Rav David Soloveitchik. So we figured, we're here already, so let's go visit the Nazir. So you see a man there, his yarmulke sits up over here, and he has all the hair in between his head and the yarmulke. When he wears tefillin, so it's not a problem, I guess he had all the hair, and he was a Nazir for years and years and years and years. He was with Kaaba Naziris way before. I guess all the hair, I never saw him when he put on tefillin. I guess all the hair was hanging down. So there's no chatzitza. And the Gemara says, if you have payas and the payas are shalobim koma, this guy's payas here. And he pulls it over his head, and then he has the ritzu of tefillin over his ear, and the payas from this side of the head are mapsik in between the tefillin and the other side of the head. So the seir shalobim koma is a chatzitza, but the seirbim koma is not a chatzitza. So the long hair doesn't pose a problem when you put on tefillin for chatzitza if it's seirbim koma. But it's a problem. You know, a Jewish person should, a man shouldn't dress, shouldn't take a haircut like a woman, and you shouldn't take a haircut like a hippie. Call yourself the name of Elohim. They should dress accordingly. When you dress nicely, I remember they told me years ago that the BBC is a radio station, they insist that the news people have to wear a three-piece suit. Well, I have to wear a three-piece suit, they're not on television. Because they know if you wear a three-piece suit, you speak with more derech eretz. It has hashpa on the person. If a person dresses like a ben Torah, a person dresses like a kol yisrael b'nei melachim, it'll have a hashpa on him. The Gemara says that in Bavel, Talmid Chacham used to wear rabbinic garments. In Eretz Yisrael, not so much. In Bavel, they used to wear special rabbinic outfits. And the Gemara says, why? Because they're not B'nai Torah, because they didn't know how to learn so well. So what does that mean? It means that by wearing the begodim, so it had a hashpah on them, so they became more B'nai Torah. You have to dress and you have to take haircut accordingly, like a real Ben HaMelech, like a prince. And realize that you're a Ben HaMelech, and you have an achrayis towards the rest of the tzibur. You have to act like a Ben HaMelech. You're representing the Jewish religion to the rest of the Jews. I don't think it's a smart idea to have long hair.
If a parent doesn't take care of himself, to what degree can a child force or impress upon the father to start doing so, such as eating healthier or doing exercise?
The din of kibud av v'yeim doesn't mean that you give in to everything that the parents want. That's not permissible if it's detrimental to the health. There's a famous Rosh Yeshiva in Baltimore Yeshiva who smoked himself to death. His children would always take all the cigarettes away from him, and he kept on going buying more cigarettes till he finally died from them. There was a Rebbe in YU who died from smoking so much. It was terrible. It was a Talmud Rav Moshe Feinstein. It's terrible. if the parents are doing things that are detrimental to the health, the children have to try to prevent them. I don't know, they shouldn't have a fist fight with the parent, but they should try to see to it that they eat proper food with the healthy, you know, with the healthy mishigasin. I don't know if the a lot of people eat unhealthy and they live arichas yam, but to smoke and to eat foods that's clearly unhealthy, that for sure the children, that's not keeping up. The children should not let the parents, if they have shlita over the situation, that's not including the keep it up to let the parents do whatever they please. If it's against their health, so the children have an achrayus to see to it that the parents stay healthy and live longer.
What is the issur of texting on Shabbos? Are there any lenient opinions regarding electricity that would result in allowing it?
I thought the prohibition of texting is ksiva. Is a ksav shel kayama is a melacha derais, a ksav shel kayama. What the texting, I don't even know what texting is. I don't know how to use, I have this cell phone in my pocket, I don't know how to use it. So usually off. In America I don't use a cell phone. What texting is, the message remains just for a short while, and then it disappears. Or you push a button to have it appear. It's probably ksiva. Ksiva medarabara, ksiva medarata. Certainly prohibited. Even leaving out the electricity. Using electricity to do ksiva. So ksiva is also ksiva. Writing numbers or writing words. Or making a picture is all included in ksiva. I don't understand why such a yetzirah that people have, young high school students have such a desire to text and it's an addiction. Like people are addicted to drugs and people are addicted to smoking. So the young high school students become so addicted to texting that they can't control themselves. It's a sickness. It's terrible.
If a person leaves on a television from before Shabbos, or if a person is in a hospital and the television is on, can one watch television?
On Shabbos, there are 39 malachas that are prohibited, so there's clearly no violation of any malacha if I sit and watch television. But there's a necessity of Shabbos, Shabbosim. In addition to the prohibitions of malacha, there's a mitzvah. The Shabbos has to have a Shabbos-like atmosphere. You have to wear big day Shabbos. The people wear big day Shabbos when they go to shul, and they come home, they put on a bathrobe. The women, the men, at home, they walk around like slobs. Big day Shabbos has to be all day long big day Shabbos. So that people, I mean, in America now, by modern Orthodox groups, Shabbos afternoon, everybody comes to shul casual already. Come to shul, no jacket, no tie, everything is relaxed. Shabbos is all day long, Shabbos. There was, after Rav Soloveitchik's wife passed away, so he was very deep in mourning over the death of his wife. So the students wanted him to be Mesiach Das from his tragedy. So they insisted, they pressured him, he should say shiurim for them in the summertime. So they forced themselves upon him. So they came to Boston and they demanded he should give shiurim. So he gave shiurim and he wasn't thinking about the death of his wife. So the Jewish community apparently doesn't live in the neighborhood near the yeshiva, near Maimonides school, where he was giving the shiurim on Shabbos and on the weekdays. So some of the people would walk 45 minutes from the other side of town in order to attend the shiurim on Shabbos afternoon. So it was very hot in the summertime. Rav Soloveitchik saw one of the balabatim walking from the other side of town without his jacket on. He was coming to participate in the shiur. So he said, Shabbos? You walk on the street without a jacket? You have to wear big day Shabbos. So he says, well, I left my, on Erev Shabbos, I left my jacket there in my Maimonides because I planted David Mincha there. So he said, forget about David. You're not allowed to walk on the street without a jacket on Shabbos. Big day Shabbos, you have to wear. So he said, but I want to come here this year and it's too hot. So he said, don't come here this year. So stay home.
Wow.
Big day Shabbos, you have to dress up Shabbos day. All day long, you have to dress up Shabbos day. It's not right. I was speaking last night at the Malach Malkus. I said, I was here for a week, a little less than a week. I enjoyed everything except for Thursday night. Thursday night, an Israeli rabbi came to show me what it says in the newspapers here. So one of the things that they have in the newspapers is that people in Eretz Yisrael are starting to follow the traditions of Rabbi Soloveitchik. What are the traditions of Rabbi Soloveitchik? Everything goes. Rabbi should walk around in jeans. You don't have to keep all the mitzvahs. Whatever your intuition, you think that this mitzvah doesn't apply, so don't observe it. Everything casual, casual. Rabbi Soloveitchik was not casual, casual. Every minig that says in Shulchan Aruch that the Mishnah Berurah says we don't observe already for 500 years, he said, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you got to observe that minig. Every din, every minig in Shulchan Aruch, you got to observe. Rabbi Soloveitchik had traditions. Here and there he had traditions that we don't follow the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, and he had reasons why. Had based on the Don Lidon, based on the Rajbo, based on the Rambam, based on the Tosfos, whatever. He had to have traditions of him. He didn't just make up things on the top of his head. So this is what these people in Eretz never saw Rabbi Soloveitchik, never heard him, don't know anything of what he stands for. All of his hashkafa was based on halacha. Rav Kook, Chief Rabbi Kook, the first chief rabbi, has many essays in hashkafa. So one of his essays he writes, we should develop the system of hashkafa, of machshava, emuna, that's based on halacha in the Gemara. If you're going to base hashkafa on agadot, it's very hard, because the agadot, we don't know how to interpret agadot. Halacha, we know what the din is, and sure enough, there's a din. So it's better to develop hashkafa, emuna, should be based on halacha. So one of the rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael pointed out to me, Rabbi Sugarman, Yeshiva Tagolan and Chistin, so he once pointed out, that's Rav Kook writes, but he says Rav Kook himself hardly ever does that. He says he saw that by Rav Soloveitchik much more than by Rav Kook. Rav Soloveitchik, much of the hashkafa was based on halacha. Serious halacha. And the hashkafa is based on halacha. It's not wishy-washy, whatever you want is okay. Intuition. Big Goyim follow intuition. But Hamayin Am shouldn't follow intuition. How do they know? Too much. Okay. Too much. Said too much, yeah.
Can one buy any Starbucks coffee?
I think some of the Starbucks are not kosher. Some of the flavors are not kosher. The question is, those are not kosher, but they're cooked in the same kettles where they wash the kettles in the same washing machine with the kettles that they cook the tray for Starbucks. So that's a question. If you cook a kosher and a non-kosher, if you wash dishes together, kosher and non-kosher, so will you make the kosher dish treif or not? So if you use detergent, so in Shulchan Aruch we assume whenever you mix in detergent, so it's going to be nice and tamugam. So the treif of Belia will not make treif the kosher cleats. But the question is, not all of the washing machines have detergent on the first rinse. In the washing machine, first you have the first rinse to get off all the dirt, and then you have later on the further rinse. So the second rinse, they always have the detergent kick in. And half of the time, half of the machines don't have any detergent on the first rinse. It's just burning hot water. So if there's no detergent on the first rinse, then you got a serious problem. It may well be that they wash together the kettle on which they cook the kosher coffee, the kettle on which they cook the non-kosher coffee, the same washing machine at the same time, and no detergents. It could be that the kosher kettle just became choked. So that's what the CRC in Chicago, the Kashrus organization of the Vada Rabbanim of Chicago, Rabbi Cohen, the big Talmid Chacham there, so he published a whole essay about this, that just what to be concerned about. It's a problem. I don't drink coffee, so to me it's not a problem. But for those who drink coffee, it's a problem. Got to look into it. Yeah, no two Starbucks are going to be the same. Sometimes they don't wash them together, and sometimes they do have detergent or they don't have detergent. So you can't get a sack that's going to apply all over. Each case is going to be different.
The last question: are there in the world today, in business and also in leisure, it's very common for people to go to bars? Sometimes with colleagues, student peers, are there halachic problems with doing such?
Sure, there are halachic problems. What kind of a question? The Tanoim prohibited drinking stam yenon, bishulakam, and pasakam because it may lead to intermarriage. We have the highest rate of intermarriage we ever had. It's worse than it ever was. The Chayyadim complains about the high rate of intermarriage in Vilna. He lived during the time of the Vilna Gaon. He said Hesper, he was a dying in Vilna, and said Hesper, the Vilna Gaon. The high rate of intermarriage in Vilna, there was one person intermarried once every 500 years. What was the high rate of intermarriage? I don't know what he's talking about. We live in America, it's intermarriage, unbelievable. So of course we have to be careful. So the Gemara says, an added gzera, if you live in a city where there are a lot of Jews violating Stam Yenom, unfortunately New York City is the case, many Jews, many non-observant Jews drink Stam Yenom. So then the Gemara says the observant Jews have to be machman themselves additionally, not even to drink beer in a bar. If the beer is kosher, they should buy the beer and drink it outside or drink it at home. They shouldn't drink it in the bar. Then the Chayyadim is of the opinion that not only did they prohibit, is that me? Ooh, look at that. What do I do? How do I turn it off? You're starved. Okay. Even when it rings, I don't know how to use it. So then the Chayyadim is of the opinion that not only are you not allowed to drink beer in a bar, you're not allowed to drink coffee in a coffee shop, you're not allowed to drink, they used to have chocolate drinks, warm chocolate. He thinks even soft drinks you're not allowed to drink. Not allowed to drink soda in a store where they sell soda. If the soda is kosher, you should buy it and drink it outside. I remember when I was single, I once took out a girl. So I was saying, where do you think we should go? So I said, let's go to a coffee shop. So I said, it's a question if you're allowed to go. So she started to scream, no, 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 coffee shop! Ah! Obviously, I didn't marry her. She's telling me what to dinamo. Okay. The Chayyadim holds you're not allowed to drink coffee in a coffee shop because we live in New York and so many Jews violate Stamkinim, so they're observant Jews shouldn't even drink soft drinks in a place that's miyucha. Sure, it's a problem. Stam, you're gonna drink in a bar, you're gonna drink beer, you're gonna drink liquor, you're gonna be a little tipsy, it's gonna lead to sin. That's a terrible thing. We shouldn't all, people think that they're so strong and they're a religious observance, they're not gonna sin. Everybody has a Yetzirah. Everybody, men have a Yetzirah for women, everybody has a Yetzirah for Geneva, for other things, everybody has a Yetzirah for everything. Gotta go with students in university, a Goyish student university, to go to a bar. Who knows what's gonna come next? It's not so far fetched. Students who learn in yeshiva 1 or 2 or 3 years, it's not a chiddush. They come back to America, they go to university, they say, go to Columbia. So, what do you do? After 6 months, many of them stop wearing a yarmulke. And after 12 months, no more Shabbos, no more kashrus, nothing. The 3 years of learning, all down the drain. You have to go with a hope, either go to a Jewish university, okay, or if you have to go to Goyish university, go with the whole group and be mechazik each other. You have to be mechazik each other. You shouldn't think that you're going to survive. You may not succeed in surviving, remaining observant. It's very common. Europe, for sure, it's a big problem. Children come and they study in Eretz Yisrael 1 or 2 or 3 years, boys or girls, they go back to Europe, there's no support system there. Switzerland, other parts, have no support system at all. So after 2 years, it's like Kalahaya. The fact that they spent 1 or 2 or 3 years in Eretz Yisrael is meaningless. Everything goes down the drain. Wherever you go, you have to have chizuk. You have to have chizuk for the shmiras and mitzvahs. To go to a bar with other friends, even if they're all boys, even if they're all Jewish, it's a very unintelligent idea. You should never drink. I only drink when I have a cold, when I have a sore throat. Should never drink. What the shikus is a terrible thing. Look, you should continue to be matzlich and learning. The learning is important. We live in a generation in Europe before the Second World War. There were traditions in every community. Everybody knew how to be an observant Jew. And most of the people after bar mitzvah, they went to work. How many children went to learn in the yeshiva? I remember our Rebbe in yeshiva said, Rabbi Gamelik told us, you people imagine, you have a romantic vision of what life was like in Europe before the Second World War. It's not the way you think. The Miri Yeshiva at its peak had 400 students up to from 400 different cities. One bacher came from every city. They couldn't take more than one. All the others went to work after Bar Mitzvah. They were all observant. There were traditions for Dairy Dairis. Everybody knew the tradition. Now we live in a world where all the traditions have disappeared. There are no more traditions. So you have to be mechazik yourself by Liman HaTorah. Through Liman HaTorah, this will be mechazik you and Shmiras and Mitzvahs. Whether you go with Techinuch or Rabbanus or not is irrelevant. But you have to learn Torah to know how to be an observant Jew today. Today, whoever doesn't go to yeshiva is the religious observance is very, very shvach. You have to continue to learn for the rest of your life. You should all be matzliach to learn. Okay.
Sorry about that.